So before we crack on with part two of our J2 school grading roundup, I just want to mention that I'm doing the JTalk Newswire almost every day this week, because it's a very busy season for J-League transfers, and I appreciate that not everyone has the time or willpower to go through every single club's Twitter feed for their signing announcements. So don't worry, I do that for you. And for patrons of the J-Talk podcast, I put them in a nice little document that you're able to peruse at your own leisure. And yeah, usually either at the end of the day or the beginning of the next morning, I'll put it out. And so yeah, I'll keep you up to date with all the transfers as they happen, and which they probably will happen for the next couple of days. So yeah, if you get a chance, check out the J-Talk Newswire.
I found it super useful already, Stu, because I often see transfers on Twitter first thing in the morning, but I forget about them. So I've got really bad short-term memory these days. So having them kind of re-upped, you know, compartmentalized for me in the email is really handy. So yeah, I recommend anybody who wants to get in on that really should. It's good stuff. Before we move on, we should mention as well, we had a message from our good friend and supporter Tobias, who's heavily involved with the transfer market website, which I think is based out of Germany. At least it's all in German when I try and access it to log in bad predictions for J-League matches. But if you want to help Tobias, basically he's working on the sort of updated databases for kind of player values and things for J1 and J2 for next year, and they want to add J3 as well. So if you drop him a line, he'll send you the spreadsheets for each league that you can use to kind of input your sort of values or your notes about the players. You don't have to talk about every player, you don't have to list every player, but just the players that you're confident with or that you know will be helpful. If you want to know more about that, just get in touch with him on Twitter at Condrei, Condrei. And if you're not on Twitter for whatever reason, you can hit us up at the pod, I guess. We can pass your email address on to him, and he can send you an email and get you involved. So yeah, if you want to help Tobias out with transfer market, then yeah, hit him up or hit us up, and we can pass the message on. Okay, we better crack on with our end of season awards is the wrong word, grades, yes, for J2 guys. So we're talking about the bottom half of the table now. We'll look at Tokyo Verdy first of all in 12th place. Happily for listeners who are bored shitless of me going on about Tokyo Verdy, we all agreed that they deserve a C for their pretty solid but unspectacular efforts in 2020. I'm sure we're going to talk more about Tokyo Verdy soon because of their sort of boardroom bloodbath that's taken place very publicly over the last week or so. But that's for another time, I think. So C for Tokyo Verdy, we agree. Matsumoto Yamaga, Stu, you brought them up already. They ended up finishing 13th. I decided that their sort of very, very ropey first half of the season meant that I could only give them a D. And Mike, you went along with that. You're also a D for Matsumoto. So, Stu, how come you went for a C? And then I'll bring Mike in as well. So what do you think, Stu? C for Matsumoto?
It's interesting because, two Ds. I think that possibly the course correction that they initiated halfway through the year maybe kind of factored into my decision, because they were horrendous in the first half of the year. They were bad, and looking back, yeah, Keiichiro Nuno wasn't the guy for them. He'd done a great job at Gunma, but he obviously wasn't ready, and it was a difficult job to step into after Sorimachi, who'd been there for such a long time, had left, and Masaki Iida as well, the captain, Hiroyuki Takasaki left as well. There was a core of players who had been with Matsumoto for a long time, and obviously the Yasuharu Sorimachi, the coach, had been there almost forever, and anybody coming in and taking over that job was kind of, it wasn't a poison chalice because it's a good job to have, but Nuno wasn't the guy. But they recognized that he was the problem, and they got rid of him, and the results changed. And I think maybe that course correction has factored into my grade. They were a good side in the second half of the year. I think they only lost twice in the last kind of 15 games or so. They played some really good stuff. Serginho looked really good up front. Toyofumi Sakano looked good. Taro Sugimoto looked good. Suddenly, from being a really stodgy side in the first half of the year, they looked like an expressive side and a good attacking side in the second half of the year. It's not the time to talk about it, but they've gone a bit buck wild in the transfer market, signing a whole kind of load of midfielders, and they're looking good for 2021. I know this is 2020, and I think that the good stuff they did in the second half of the year outweighs the bad stuff they did in the first half of the year. I didn't expect them to be a playoff team, and they've probably should have finished a little bit higher, but weighing up both halves of the year, I think I'll side with the second half, and yeah, that just edges a C for them for me.
It's all fair comments, and it's lots of good points made. Mike, what did you think of Matsumoto overall?
Yeah, I think they are some good points, and I think that for me, I mean, giving them a D there towards the top end of a D, I think that would be fair to say. John, you just mentioned very briefly when you were going through the first half of the table with Yamagata having had two halves, a season of two halves. Matsumoto are really the same, their first half of the season was, it was pretty pitiful, wasn't it? I mean, they were down in the bottom three, even weren't they, for a little bit close to the start of the season. And perhaps, in the same way that a person who only watched or took any account of the first game after the restart of J2 and came away from that experience thinking that Ehime were better than Tokushima. I can't get Serginho from that period out of my mind. I just think. Fully accepting that the team has really he and the team have really kind of turned things around. I just can't get he just looked a horrendous player during the opening part of the season, and I can't really overcome that in my mind.
Go ahead.
No, that's it.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair commentary. And Stu and I used to I think when we talked about Matsumoto's, Serginho was synonymous with Matsumoto for a while. It was like if he played well, they might get a draw or a win. If he had a poor game or was missing, nothing happened. I mean, we wanted them to change players and try something different. But I think Isma played a couple of games and then he was out. And it was one or two other players who sort of drifted in and played a couple of games, then weren't used again. So, yeah, weird season for Matsumoto. I don't think Stu and I, in the pre-season pod, we didn't fancy them for the playoffs, but I don't think we expected them to be sort of 19th, 20th, for as long as they were. But, yeah, they had a really strong second half and especially end to the season, didn't they? So I think just sneaking in some 2021 chat again, I think they could potentially be a force to be reckoned with next year. Finishing just below them were Jeff Chiba, and again, pleasingly for long-time listeners, we all agreed that they should get a D grade, so we can move on quickly without me giving lots of opinions about them. I think the best thing for them probably is that they're keeping hold of their manager, Yoon Jung-hwan, for next season. He signed a new deal, or his deal's been extended. And we won't go into the details, but they've also been very busy with transfers in and out during the first week or so of the winter break. So we'll see what next year brings for them. But I think a D grade is fair for what they produced in 2020. Omiya finished 15th. I ended up giving them a D grade. This might just be because I bumped into Iber enough times on his days off that I've got a soft spot for the team in general. Stu, Mike, you were a bit more laser focused on this one and gave an E for Omiya. So, Mike, you go first. I know you watch Omiya very closely, so E for Omiya. And what caused the most disdain this year?
So I think that the two biggest sins that management in professional football can commit are, one, failing to put together a good squad, resource notwithstanding. And when you look at the forward players that Almere had at the start of the season, the club's management, and I'm interpreting that phrase broadly, management, they Almere failed to do that. So the main three strikers that they had in the squad were Haskich, a from out of nowhere gamble. There's no way to know how successful that was going to be. And the answer is that he scored one goal, and that was a penalty that he won with a dive. And the other main strikers that were in the Almere squad at the start of the season were Takemitsu Tomiyama, and he's scored 13 goals in 7 seasons. I think we can all agree that that's slightly less than 2 a year. And Akira Toshima, who they got from Yokohama FC, and he's never scored more than 6 goals in a season. So in other words, you put those three guys together and they are not a forward line who is going to get you promoted. It's just not going to happen. Those numbers are just not big enough.
But luckily they brought in Iba midway through the season, Mike, to solve that problem.
You're absolutely right, and that's you know, rendered my opinion completely irrelevant, or it would do if he hadn't scored you know, one goal. So it just didn't happen. Part of the reason why that didn't happen for Iba is perhaps related to the second of my biggest sins, and that is something which is a bit more directly related to the coach, and that is making the team less than the sum of its parts. And I think that that's what Takagi did. And he set up a defensive team that couldn't defend, and that it was easy to, and that was the confidence that they built up for, you know, from the first 6 or 7 games of the season, because remember they were doing pretty well after sort of 6 or 7 games. They were kind of second, third in the table. It soon became apparent after they'd lost a couple of games how kind of budgy hearted and fragile they were, and really that's down to him. Defensive team that couldn't defend, and they had no clear route to goal. I'm always interested in the idea that a coach must have in their mind, I don't know if they do, but it feels as if this is a reasonable thing for me. If they can articulate how they imagine that their team is going to score, what are the normal ways that this team that I'm setting up are going to score? And I don't think that Takagi could do that. They didn't have clear routes to goal. If you look at the goals that Almere have scored, they tend to be pretty scrappy. You know, there's nothing where you can see this is a plan, this has been executed, everybody knew what they were doing, and yeah, this just came off. There's nothing like that. Have they been unlucky with injuries? Yeah, absolutely they have. But overall, you know, Almere is as Stuart described very well in his financial review towards the start of the season. Almere is a rich club by J2 standards, and this is a disaster of a season for you know, to the idea of Almere finishing 15th and below Tochigi and Mito. This is a disaster. And I think that 2021 now is a very, very important season for the club. That's another story. But I don't think that Almere can be anything other than an E because of the way that many of us would have had expectations of their performance, and 15th is not it.
Yeah, I think for Stuart and I, the alarm bell wasn't so much selling Juanma Delgado to Fukuoka, but the fact that he wasn't really replaced, or the idea seemed to be that Akira Toshima would replace him. I don't know if you know this, Mike, but when he was at Machida, his nickname was Low Energy Toshima, among the fans. Usually shortened to Roenet. Yeah. I'm not sure he was ever going to quite do the business. Stuart, a budgie-hearted disaster, and we're not talking about the pod, but Omiya's 2020 campaign. Anything you want to add?
I can't really add anything to what Mike said. This season was a catastrophe for Omiya, and just they didn't have. It's weird how much worse they were this year compared with last year. That was the astounding thing. And you know, like Mike says, they gambled. They bought in Haskett, they bought in Maximenko, they bought in a foreign goalkeeper who they didn't trust as their number one, which is always it's always a danger sign in my opinion. And budgie hearted, they looked weak. I mean, they were shanked like home and away against Ryukyu. I remember watching Giravan's Kitakyushu absolutely murder them at home. That was bizarre. That was like watching Brazil against a non-league side, how much better Giravan's were than Omiya. And then you had the ridiculous game towards the end of the season where Omiya were 3-0 up against Ehime and ended up conceding 3 goals in 5 minutes. And I'm not surprised Takagi lost his job. I think his reputation's been kind of really damaged by this season, because it was his side, it was his squad, it was his decisions to bring in players and let players go, and the players, they just failed to play for him. And Omiya are in a bad place right now, and it'll be interesting to see whether they have the finances to go out and kind of strengthen their side like Matsumoto have done, like Kyoto have done this year. I suspect that Omiya might find the going quite tough again in 2021, because this year was so bad.
I'll just add 3 quick points before we crack on Omiya, but I think that you raised the point about the Ehime game in particular, where they were 3-0 up and ended up drawing 3-3. Their game management in general was pretty dreadful all throughout the season, in terms of drop points and not managing situations prudently or correctly. Point number 2, I would say, I don't know how they failed to integrate Ippei Shinozuka effectively into the team, and they desperately needed, you know, some kind of live wire in that final third, and he really is, he'd be on your wish list as the ideal player to do that. I don't know whether he was injured when he initially went out of the team, or he was out of favour or what, but the idea that there wasn't a place for him, or he couldn't be integrated or even made kind of central to the team, is absolutely baffling to me. And the third point would be one of my cardinal sins, which, you know, as Mike was mentioning, is when a team turns up for games that don't matter at the end of the season, which I think Omiya actually played really well in losing at Tokushima. In round 41, they ended up losing 1-0, but they gave a really good account of themselves. And they were also pretty good and really at it in the last game, the home game against Niigata, when they won 3-1. And that kind of thing always annoys me, when a team kind of shows their potential at the end of the season after it's kind of passed its sell-by date and doesn't mean anything. So I think, the new manager, is it Ken Iwase? Is that right? He's going to have his work cut out, I think, next year. Okay, we'll move on to FC Ryukyu, finishing just below Omiya. We all agreed on this, a C grade for their season. I think they were very entertaining to watch, had some big wins, didn't they? A few fives and sixes, but in other games they were pretty fragile at the back. I think a C grade overall is pretty fair for them. We all agreed Ryukyu get a C. We were also in agreement on Okayama, which is good, because that means we don't have to talk about them very much, because they were pretty nondescript this year. A D grade for them. From all of us in 17th place. I want to talk about Kanazawa more, but hopefully we can do that in a pre-season pod for 2021. We all agreed that for Kanazawa, a C grade was the right grade for this year. I was kind of surprised to see them ending up 18th in my mind. You know, my imagination, they were a bit higher. But I know that again, that part of the table, really anywhere, kind of from 19th up to 11th or 12th, is pretty bunched up. So yeah, C's for Kanazawa across the board. For Machida, it's another team that we could talk about a lot more, I think, but we were in agreement they should get a D. We all gave Machida a D grade. For me, Machida got a really, really good midfield, but problems pretty much all the other positions at the moment. Gunma, I thought, would really struggle. Excuse me. In the end, they didn't struggle too much. They finished 20th. So, again, we're all in agreement that we give them a D. So that brings us on to what would ordinarily be the relegation places, the bottom two, where Mike and I are in agreement. But, Stu, you're the odd one out here, so to speak. Let's talk about Ehime, first of all, finishing 21st. Mike and I gave an E grade for Ehime's 2020 season. But, Stu, you were up there with the D. So, tell us about Ehime and why you went for a D grade for them.
Well, what did you expect? That's a genuine question. That's not a snarky interview answer. That's a genuine question. Like, did you expect them to finish outside the bottom two?
Well, no. But let me. They, if you look at the points, they finished 15 points worse off than Gunma. So they would have been relegated by 15 points. I think that's, for me, that's the egregious part. I don't think I'd have a problem with them finishing in the relegation zone, as it were. But to be so short and conceding 68 as well, I think goal defense of my 30 is a bit surprising.
I've got a direct answer to your question as well. I'm going to read my notes. It says, I'm tempted to put Ehime as a D because this isn't a notably worse performance than one could reasonably expect from the club. But then I remembered that they're the only team who have made me laugh out loud with their ineptitude.
Well, that's a problem you have when Okamoto's your goalkeeper. I think...
Or is your second choice goalkeeper, yes.
I think that we may be coming at this from different angles, and that's not to say that I don't understand why you've given them an E. I mean, objectively, probably finishing in the bottom two and finishing so far behind the others is egregious, like you say, John. But I just feel that for Ehime and to a certain extent Yamaguchi as well. I just think that, particularly for Ehime, the resources they have are minuscule compared to the teams that they're competing against. And they, I think they did the best with what they had. And I'm actually surprised that they didn't finish bottom. And I think they got a few more points than I originally thought they would get. I mean, yeah. I thought they would finish in the bottom two in the preseason rankings, but I genuinely don't know what else was possible for them, and that's why I haven't given them the real bad grade, because giving them an E seems to suggest that they were worse than they were gonna be, and I don't think they were.
I think that's fair enough. I think as I kind of alluded to already, my issue isn't with them finishing. I mean, they could have finished bottom for me, and I could have still given them D or even C, you know, based on the point shows. But I think they were much. I hadn't really, because there's no relegation this year, I hadn't paid that much attention to the actual points at the bottom, to be honest, until it came to like the last couple of rounds and then preparing for this kind of season review. And when I realised how far off the pace they were. I mean, they would have been relegated with, you know, seven games to go or whatever in an ordinary season. For me, that was... I think there were enough decent players, let's say outfield players, to be clear, in that first 11. Them to be a little bit better. But the goalkeeping was uniformly terrible, whichever goalkeeper they put in there. So Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think Dee's probably fair. Okay, we had the same. We're going to have a similar discussion about Yamaguchi. I think the side that finished bottom again. Mike and I were perhaps on the harsh end, giving them an E, and Stu, it was another D for you for Yamaguchi. So, Mike, do you want to go first and talk about Yamaguchi and why you gave them an E grade?
Well, I think that. Comparing them with Ehime, as we've just been talking about, whilst you could be pretty confident that Ehime were going to find the season very tough going, and end up with, you know, roughly 34 points from a 42-game season, with Yamaguchi, you don't necessarily have that feeling. So if things had gone differently and they'd finished up with, I don't know, 53 points instead of 33 points, none of us would have batted an eyelid. You know, that would have been pretty decent and, oh, you know, well done, they're a small team, but it would have been pretty unremarkable. And I think that, you know, just looking at that defence, and 74 goals conceded, that's the worst defence in the division. And I'm thinking back to the point that Stuart made about when Shimoda, the coach, was sacked, and Stuart seemed to be quite surprised about that. And but if he was that great a coach, then he probably wouldn't have had the worst defensive record in the division. So I don't think you can say that it's a surprise that he's going to get sacked. He's got Yuri, who I think, you know, we can agree he's done some decent things. As he's a decent goal scorer. He's a big, quick guy. He's got some skill. So there were, you know, some good things about that Yamaguchi had available to them, and you know, it's turned out to be a bad, bad, bad season. And under normal circumstances, they would have got relegated. Yeah. Oh, a fun fact. Only one, so separate from this, really, but only one team failed to score against Yamaguchi. Only one team.
I've got no idea. Is it Mito?
No, because Kazuma Yamaguchi scored goal of the season against Renofa, right?
He did score one.
Was it Omiya? Did Omiya fail to score?
No, it was actually Kyoto. So Peter Utaka did not score against Yamaguchi.
So they do have that feather in the cap. They kept out the top scorer, but only him.
Yeah, they put all their eggs in one basket. We're not going to let Utaka score.
Tell us a little bit, just before you go, Stu, I realised that I had no idea about Yamaguchi's trajectory over the last three seasons in terms of league placings. So I know this year was a weird one, it was crazy, and I know you follow Yamaguchi quite closely, you know a lot about the manager, for example. But in 2018, they finished 8th in J2. Last season, 15th, so they dropped 7 places. This season they've dropped another seven places. So I think if I not to take Mike's side and gang up on you, but from the outside observer, pretty much any manager would be finding the hot seat very hot, you know, based on that trajectory, wouldn't they? Or are we missing something?
Well, I think objectively that's true, but this kind of season was always going to come for Yamaguchi at some point. You can't keep hemorrhaging good players like Yamaguchi do on a yearly basis. And I think that it's something that maybe Giravan's Kitakyushu are about to find out, because you do well enough so that teams notice your good players, but not so well as it motivates those players excuse me, to stay. And I think that this was the season where Shimoda just couldn't magic any other rabbits out of hats. the reason I was surprised that he was sacked was not because of the results on the pitch, because like you said, objectively they have been getting worse, but the caliber of players that he's developing there are good, and they're really good, and they're good enough so that other teams take note, and other teams know that players coached by Shimoda have an innate knowledge of how football should be played, and he's a player developer. He's in the same way, he's actually quite similar to Takeshi Oki, ex-Gifu, now Kumamoto, in that I believe he's an outstanding talent spotter. He can recognize good talent and develop it, but he just can't coach a defense. And I think that it's obviously coaching a defense is a major part of football, but it's more of an existential question, not to get too existential because it's 1 a.m. in Japan right now, but it just depends on what you want these clubs to be. Like, what do you want Reno for Yamaguchi? What are your expectations of Kanazawa? What are your expectations for Ehime? What are your expectations for Yamaguchi? And I think that they had a bad season, but they were going to have a bad season at some point, just because you can't keep replenishing the stock of good players because there are only a certain number of them about. And I think that did they have an objectively bad season? Yeah, they did. Did they manage to develop some good players? Yeah, they did. And I think that maybe those kind of things split the difference between a D and an E, maybe a D plus possibly. But yeah, that's why I think that Yamaguchi don't deserve the lowest grade possible.
I think the tricky one for me, and I'll give you a chance to comment on this as well, is it's kind of balancing productivity. You know, when we're talking about professional sports or elite sports, it's the results on the pitch that kind of are the grade in themselves, isn't it? Like we've spent an hour or so, you know, grading these teams, and some people might think that's pointless because you can look at the league table and see how many wins or how many points, you know, what place a team finished. But I think in the case of a team like Yamaguchi, yeah, I think sometimes on the outside looking in, we don't actually know what the goals for the team are. I mean, this is something that will come up when we talk about J3 and clubs like YSCC, you know. I mean, what is the end game for a professional football club like that, which is basically a sort of sports, you know, local sports cooperative with very few fans? I mean, they're never going to take a bite of Yokohama Marinos' pie or Yokohama FC's pie, you know, in that sense. So, yeah, it's difficult for me, you know, to kind of balance, and I'm rambling, so Mike, I'll bring you in quickly, but, you know, my son is 7 years old and he plays football, and when his team loses, he's disappointed, but I'm not when I'm watching, because it's not really about winning or losing at that point. It's about him learning, you know, what to do and how to play. And I think, because J2's, I think, my opinion, a bit oversized, 22 teams is too many. My opinion, and that's not just because I tried to watch all the highlights this year and it nearly put me in hospital, but yeah, I think we do have this kind of, there are kind of substrata, subdivisions in the league to some extent, and I think maybe Yamaguchi, like you said, Stu, they're kind of on the borderline of maybe D and E in terms of a grade. I think they might also be on a borderline in terms of course they're a professional football club. I'm not casting any aspersions in that direction, but is their goal to get to J1 at any point? And if it isn't, maybe J2 isn't the place where they should be. Do you get what I'm trying to say? I'm not saying they don't necessarily belong in the league, but yeah, it's hard for us to give a good grade without knowing what they themselves are trying to do, you know, trying to achieve. Mike, what do you think? What do you think about what Stu was saying?
Well, I think that what's particularly striking to me about this is in fact that not so much that J2 has sort of strata within it, but in fact how similar a lot of J2 is. So if you look at, Corfu and Kitakyushu, fourth and fifth, well, and they've got 65 points. And Gunma in 20th got 49 points. So that's a 16-point gap. And there's only a 15-point gap between Gumma and Ehime. So Gumma are as close to being Corfu or Kitakyushu as they are to being Ehime. That is a massive, massive bunch of clubs who are, roughly speaking, in the middle of the table. That's 420th. So to me, there's nothing wrong with expecting Yamaguchi to be within that bunch. Nothing wrong with expecting, it's not unreasonable to expect that Yamaguchi can achieve what any of these kind of smaller budget teams, presumably Kitakyushu, obviously Mito, Tochigi, maybe Ryukyu, Kanazawa, why can't Yamaguchi achieve something like those kinds of teams? And you know, this year, for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened for them. It just hasn't worked out. But I don't think that's an unreasonable aspiration.
I think with my sort of analytical head on, I think you're both right. I think, Stu, that the point you were making was, in any given season, Yamaguchi could be a team that does that, couldn't they? Like Mike suggesting, but also in any given season, they could end up being, you know, having a bad run and being quite close to the bottom. That's an oversimplification, but that's kind of the point you were making, isn't it, Stu?
It is the point I was making, and they have been. I think you said they were 8th in 2018, right? They were 15th in 2019. So they have done that, but maybe, like I said before, they did well enough so that their players shined in the team, which made them appealing for other teams to bring them in. And I think that, personally, when I look at Yamaguchi, I'm not surprised that this kind of season came about because, like I said, it was within the range of possibilities for that to happen.
It's interesting. I think that's very true. I think we could see a season that is kind of what makes J2 in a way very hard to analyze and hard to predict, but also a lot of fun, is that you just kind of, I'm sure we're going to have this conversation in a month or so's time when we sit down to look at teams for 2021.
A month? Jesus.
Well, yes, 6 weeks maybe. Yeah, if I'm allowed out, you know, the institution that I'm going to be wheeled into after this is finished. One player we should mention on Yamaguchi before up is Kazuma Takai, who was pretty good, wasn't he? And scored that brilliant chip, I think, against Omiya, didn't he? That was one of my favourite goals of the season. But he scored a few good ones. He's re-signed, hasn't he, with Yamaguchi for next season, which I'm quite surprised about. I felt for sure he's a player that would be on the move, possibly even to an Omiya. For example, he'd improve any of the teams in that bunch that Mike mentioned. But he's back for next season, so that gives them at least something, you know, some kind of platform to build on and build around. But it's going to be interesting to see how they do. Because for me as well, you know, Shinoda, he's been synonymous with Shimoda. Sorry, he's been synonymous with Yamaguchi for me. For the last couple of years. So yeah, where they go from there is going to be really interesting to see, I think. Gentlemen, thanks very much for your insights. We went a bit longer than I expected, but probably not as long as you expected, Stu, because you know what I'm like when I'm hosting the pod. I run a pretty loose ship. Mike, is there anything we've missed in terms of a season review for J2? Anything else you want to mention before we wrap up?
I mean, there are probably loads of things, but given that it's 1 o'clock in the morning for you guys, then I think let's cut our losses.
Yeah, the night is young. The night is young. Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Mike. And did you enjoy the experience being on the pod? Would you recommend it to your friends, or would you like to come back?
I wouldn't recommend it to my friends, but then that's because we've just spent 2 hours talking about J2. I personally have enjoyed it very much. Yeah.
That is a very good qualified answer, and I respect your candor, your honesty. It's much appreciated. Yes. Okay, Stu, anything we should add? Can we expect a transfer newswire tomorrow, or is your wife going to change the password on the PC and not let you access it?
Oh no, there's we're at that time of year in Japan where a lot of her favorite shows they have the suffix 4-hour special or 5-hour special, so. It's my idea of hell watching a Japanese TV show for 4 hours. So I think I'll have free reign on the computer to do the newswire, because I think it will be busy tomorrow, because I think it will be the last day of business for a lot of J League clubs. So I'll be working again.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think for me, you know those memes about like three words that British people hate, and it's things like team building, away day, stuff like that. I think any foreigners live in Japan, like 5-hour special, yes, or 4-hour special variety, something that strikes you with fear, doesn't it? But I'm glad they've got the J League to distract you anyway. Stu, yeah, please keep the transfer news wires coming, because I think they're going down pretty well with the Patreon followers. We'll very quickly mention as well, we should say finally the season for J2 and J3 is officially over, because in the Emperor's Cup semi-finals on Sunday, Tokushima lost 2-0 away at Gamba Osaka. Blau Blitz Akita, J3 champions, went down by the same score at Kawasaki. So we should say Otsugare Samades to them for what they've done in their respective leagues. But it's always going to be a tall order to get anything against Kawasaki or Gamba Osaka. So it proves. So Kawasaki and Gamba will play each other in the final on Friday, January the 1st. But I think that's all from us. So thanks again, guys, for joining me. It was really good to do that, I think. And good, Mike, thanks for bringing a different perspective on things. I think Stu and I sometimes end up in a kind of hive mind situation in our echo chamber. So it's good to get some new insights, some new perspectives as well. And hopefully you'll be back soon to join us again. And Stu, thanks as ever. It's always good to talk. And I did the solo pod last week, so I'm sure the listeners didn't want another one of those. So thanks for stepping in. Thanks again for listening, downloading. We've appreciated it all season long. And we appreciate it again this week. And if you're a patron as well, don't forget you can join any time. And Stu's newswires will be dropping into your inbox with alarming regularity. I have to be honest, Stu, it's very impressive. But that's all from us for this J2 season wrap-up and for this episode, and we'll be back again soon. So thanks for listening, and bye for now.